Hello, my spontaneous people. This is Johnny Bar here, and welcome to My Culture Mind. This is the show where I talk about anything in the world of modern culture, for music, movies, TV, food, and all that stuff. And today is going to be not necessarily a packed episode for today, but there is a lot. There are stuff that I really want to discuss, and obviously, as you can see by the title, I'll be talking about Le Sserafim's The Fearless album, you have the Anti-Fragile, and then you have Unforgiven, and then so this is the fourth, this is the third mini album, but Unforgiven was the full album. So I'll be talking about the Easy album, and I'm just gonna go dive in, like, you know, one song at a time. So I'm really excited to discuss that. Also, I'll be talking about the first episode of Avatar: The Last Airbender on Netflix, and the and Bad Batch season 3 with episodes 1 through 3. And I'm just gonna go rough general thoughts. I'm not gonna do a huge breakdown, but there, I really want to discuss it, and like some things that I liked, some things that I didn't like, and that sort of thing. But before I get started, if you are new to the podcast, thank you so much for listening today. This podcast is available on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you can get your podcasts. So without further ado, let us start with, let's start off with the Bad Batch, episodes 1 through 3. Now, so I'll just give a quick summary. So Tech is gone. We don't know for sure if he survived. Most likely he probably survived. He probably survived the fall. Hopefully. But yeah, I think that this episodes 1 through 3 just shows that Omega is captured by Dr. Hemlock, and these experiments, why he's getting samples of blood from clones, and why it's so necessary, because the Emperor wants an M count, that sort of a thing. And for some reason, Nala Se didn't want Omega to be found, and have a blood sample, because if they find out what her M count is, then she's going to be a huge threat, and Dr. Hemlock really wants that. So what I can say for sure is what they meant by M count, and I feel like a lot of Star Wars fans and a lot of people who are speculating, M count, short for midichlorian count. So if that is the case, if that's the reason why that the Emperor wanted a huge, large sample of M count of blood, therefore he could, you know, get a more Force-sensitive stuff, like, I don't know, something that has to do with the Force, and something about having a high midichlorian count will, this whole Project Necromancer thing. Now, I don't know what that is, maybe some people already know about it, but all I can say for sure is that, this whole project about midichlorian count, or that if that is the case, then that might be developing into more projects, and maybe that's just why we might have more Inquisitors, or maybe give Palpatine more power. I don't know, anything of that sort, but I think that is going to be the case. But you do see Omega, going through, you really get to see her shine as a character, just handling things on her own. Right now, in terms of the start of this season, Omega is the star of the show, while the Clone Force 99 are like the side characters at the moment. But you get to see more of Crosshairs working with Omega, and you can see Crosshairs really still struggling, because after he killed someone, he's killed people before, but this time is different. You can see his hand shaking. You can see him as being defeated, and he was just trying to follow orders, and then all of a sudden, when he's getting more of that free will, and all of a sudden he doesn't know what's right or what's wrong anymore, and he believes he deserves to be punished, and Omega's saying no. And also you get to see Clone Force 99, most likely is just Hunter and Wrecker, just trying to find intel on how to get Omega back, and that's the whole journey. Overall, once again, I think this is going to be the final season, where we're going to see how much in depth we're going in terms of Star Wars lore and what happened to the clones. Why are there so many that are gone? And why do we not see much of clones nowadays? So that is like the discovery we're about to see in this season, I hope. My initial thoughts are it's pretty good. I think it's a better start, or at least I think in terms of depth, and not, it doesn't feel as corny as the first two. I'm not saying that they're like super corny, but there are some episodes that felt like fillers that I'm just like, I don't care. But I feel like each episode so far has been necessary, and I think at least for these three episodes that I've seen so far. So all I can say is I'm looking forward to next week, and obviously I'm going to talk more about these episodes in the future. I will give I'm not going to give a full, like, you know, rating so far. Usually for ratings, I'm gonna give it like after the season's over, then I could do a full review of that season and how I'm going to rank it, just like what I did for the Percy Jackson show. So that's what's to come. Anyways, let's move on to Avatar: The Last Airbender, episode 1. And maybe I'll talk about I'll talk about episodes 1 and 2. So far I watched episodes 1 and 2. I will give my full series review next week after I finish the series. I'm probably gonna finish it today or tomorrow, but okay, the first two episodes, how do I feel so far? The start of episode 1, that was amazing. I loved how it looked. I loved the fight choreo. I loved the earth bending and to be honest, and I love the the fight choreography is insane, especially the especially for the Fire Nation and whatnot. I just love the look. It really took me back to, it made me realize what I love about the original series, the animated series, and they really did their best to capture what it the look and the feel of it. And I think I love I just love the world and what it offers. Now, I am going to say this. I feel like the dialogue, and this is the same thing that I felt about the One Piece Netflix show. They played it safe. I feel like, and some people might say, like, that's a bad thing. I don't think it's a bad thing. I think they're just sticking to, like, you know, the source material, and then also, like, you know, paying homage and, like, you know, without changing it up so much. But they really want to show, like, the love and care for the animated series. So they're, like, there's a level of respect, I should say. There is a level of respect of what the show has. That being said, just like the One Piece animated show, like the One Piece Netflix show, the dialogue is, it can be corny, you know. I feel like there wasn't a lot of tell and not show. And I feel like when it comes to the writing, it feels like some points we're just like, you know, reading off the script instead of actually feeling like these emotions, you know. But I will say there was one moment, like, and this is not even a spoiler, it happened. It's when Aang sees the bones of Gyatso, and I got a little bit teary-eyed, because there wasn't much dialogue there. It was just the grief, and I actually got a bit choked up, and that was really, really important. And I wish we saw more of that. That being said, I think that Yeah, the dialogue, the script is not as great, but the look of it, the look of it's amazing. And I just want to give a shout out to the actor who plays Zuko. The actor who plays Zuko is really good. He really captured what Dante Bosco did. It did feel like, you know, it's flying off right off the page. Like, it was like a good replica to the animated show, and then making it live action. So that is what I liked about it. And Aang, and for what Gordon has been given to play Aang, he did a pretty good job. And Katara as well. All these actors. While I feel like it's not the actor's fault, it's more of a writing situation. I still think that, like, even if the writing or like the dialogue was not the best, I just want to give props to like the actors who actually, it looks like they're really having a lot of fun and they're putting a lot of heart and soul, and that's what I'm getting from it. There's a lot of heart in this show so far. And all I can, I also love the what is it called? Oh, I love the Kyoshi looks great. Like Avatar Kyoshi and Kyoshi Island Suki. I love, they got the girl from the Karate Kid too. I forgot the actress's name, but she was amazing too. Oh, I love General Zhao. General Zhao and Fire Lord Ozai as well. I remember the actor who played, well, I mean, like, what's not to love about Daniel Dae Kim? Like, come on. Like, he's amazing. But I want to give a shout out to the actor who played General Zhao. And I remember this actor when I first saw him in Rush Hour. He played Seng. Like, you know, the blonde hair guy who went against, like, you know, Jackie Chan and then Chris Tucker as well. And like, he was the blonde guy. And like, he played that role well too. I'm just glad that they captured the look of it. It felt like this is what it's meant to look like, you know. And I know some people are going to be like, oh, Sokka's not Asian. Like, it didn't bother me. They didn't say they were Asian, you know. I mean, like, in a predominantly Asian, like, I should say, for, like, you know, for Avatar The Last Airbender, in terms of the show, it did have an anime feel, so you kind of assume that, like, all of them, like, looked Asian. That being said, I think the look of it, especially for, I think the guy who plays Sokka is a pretty good actor, and I think they brought up a good choice. So yeah, I think that, again, I'm not gonna give a full review on it just yet. All I know is, like, I love the actress who played Suki, and The Avatar Kyoshi scene, the fight scene, oh my god, that was amazing. I love the look of that. So I wish I hope we get to see more of that kind of badassery thing. So yeah, I'm really enjoying what I'm seeing so far, and I'll give my overall thoughts of the show next week. So yeah. Anyways, let's move on to the main topic of the day, and that is Le Sserafim with their Easy album. Okay, so once again, this is their third mini album, but it's their fourth album that they've released. So what do I gotta say? Now, I will say that some people are like, just like a lot of people are gonna have their opinions on many things, but I feel like this is gonna be their most controversial album, but it is also my favorite album so far. And I love their songs. Impurities is my favorite Le Sserafim song of all their songs. This third album, though, it's really, really trying to top it. So let's start off with Good Bones. Which is, so Le Sserafim has the habit of, like, every album, they start off with an intro, where they're just talking, But they're also speaking, like, you know, English, Korean, and Japanese all in one song slash intro. And I know some people are going to be like, and they're right. It kind of does sound like they're moaning, and people are not going to be comfortable with that. And if you see, like, the pictures of their third mini album, it can be, like, you know, some people are going to, you know, criticize, like, it's inappropriate. So, yeah, there's going to be a lot of, shouts of, like, you know, inappropriateness and all that. But I just want to talk about the songs itself. So, the intro, I think it's really, at least from what I'm hearing, it is a very punk rock sort of intro, and I love that. And I think that it's all about that girl power status, and I love that. I love that we're getting into more of that girl power, like, you know, theme. So that's what I really love about this intro. And there's this moment, like, you know, like there's this message of, like, you shouldn't degrade someone because they're true to themselves. So that's, like, kind of like the message of that. Now, do people are gonna buy it? Like, that's totally up to interpretation and, like, your take on it. So, for me, I didn't really care. I liked the intro very much, and I was like banging my head, like, was just like, oh yeah, like, you know, like, yeah, fuck yeah, that's awesome, like, you know, girl power, yeah, like, you know, that sort of thing. Now, let's move on to the song Easy. Ooh-wee. This song, oh, okay. Now, this is where people are going to be like, you know, oh, this is not the sound I was expecting. You know, what's going on? And, like, look, the fact that they're actually going this route and, like, you know, trying to do something new, that's what a lot of K-pop idols are doing. Some people are criticized for doing something different and something new. This, okay, if I could give it into perspective, this is the Coco Bop, a Coco Bop for Le Sserafim. Like, EXO created the song called Coco Bop, and it's just like, it was very different, very, like, you know, out of left field. But this is like, but I will say this, this song, it's swaggy as fuck. It is swaggy. It is, like, there's so much swag and, like, hip hop influence, and it, I don't know, there's just something about it just feels right. About this song, the more I listen to it, and I'm just like, I'm just grooving, and I love that, like, a title track like this, it makes me, like, grooves. Now, some people are going to argue, like, this is more of a, like, you know, a B track, and a B track than a title track. I didn't care. Like, if you see the dance, like, it's so swaggy, and I love it, and they're going hard, too. They mix both with feminine and masculinity, and I love that. I love that in this, not just the song, but in the music video and performances as well. So I really love about, that's what I love about Easy. Now, let's move on to Swan Song. Swan Song sounds like, it's giving me that 90s, that 90s feel, for me at least, like, but not early 90s, this is like late 90s, transitioning to early 2000s, it has that art, that somber music that, like, you know, like, girl groups could sing, and I could see a lot of, like, you know, like, I could already imagine, like, you know, the white outfits, you know, that sort of thing. It gives that feel. I mean, it's called Swan Song for a reason, which it makes me wonder why Swan Song is not the last song of this album, which makes me curious, but it didn't matter. Oh, and the dance as well. I love the dance. But this is Kazuha, like, I will say this. This is Kazuha's, like, you know, a song. I feel like, Easy is a Yunche song. Yunjin always dominates the intros. I will say this. Like, okay, so I will say for Swan Song, this is Kazuha's song, you know. Oh, damn. I feel for five songs, I feel like Yunjin will be like for the intro, and then for Easy, that could be for Yunche as well. So for Yunjin, yeah, and then like Kazuha, that'll be like swan song. Yeah, I would say that. Now the next song, Smart. That I feel like that was Chaewon's song. That was I take that back. I feel like actually no, I can you could put that for two. That is Sakura's song and also Chaewon's song. Like I feel like Sakura, like she has a lot of dialogue in that one, and like if you see the performance of Smart, and Sakura is just dominating that one. So I will give that to them. Smart is a very tropical house song, and I love that. Tropical house, and I will say it is a sexy song. It is a sexy song, and if you see the dance, yeah. And lastly, for hold on, I think for when it comes to Smart, I think Smart is basically the, I can imagine myself at the beach, you know, that sort of thing. I have not read the lyrics yet, but still, it gave me that tropical house feeling. I can see myself sipping, like, margaritas, that sort of thing. Or, no, not margaritas. I don't like margaritas. I like, maybe a tequila sunrise, maybe that sort of thing. I would definitely... It's a very addicting song, and once again, the performance. Ooh, the performance is so good. And lastly, I want to talk about We Got So Much. Now, We Got So Much, now that is very early 2000s. I could see a song sang by Christina Aguilera, I think. Or yeah, it's giving me a lot of early 2000s. If Swan Song was early 90s, this is definitely like We Got So Much. That was an definitely early 2000s. But the this is a very vocal-esque song, like with the high notes. Like, you know, both Yunjin and Chaewon, their high notes is so good. So I think that for this one, this song is definitely both Yunjin and Chaewon's song. You know, that sort of thing. Because of how their vocals, they really shine through in this album. I think this is where you get to see the powerhouse that Le Sserafim has. More of the powerhouse and the range that they can do. And you can definitely hear more of like Yunjin's singing abilities, and it just shines through those high notes that they both did. And I think it's probably like my favorite song of the album, but all these songs are really good. So, it is their most controversial album. I will say that it is their most controversial album, but I also think that it's probably one of their best. Probably like my favorite album out of the rest of them too. So yeah, and I feel like if I'm going to rank in terms of my favorite albums, I would put this first, Fearless, Anti-Fragile, and Unforgiven. But I feel like Anti-Fragile and the Unforgiven albums are like neck and neck, you know, to me at least. So yeah, all I can say, this album, oof. You know what? I don't care. I'm going to give it a 10 out of 10. I don't care. This album is so good. I listened to this album in my sleep, so that's how good I love this song. Anyways, yeah, it is a 10 out of 10 for me. So yeah. Anyways, I am looking forward to their Lennyverse variety shows and their Day Off specials. I'm looking forward to that. So hopefully it comes soon. But yeah. So you know, here's to good luck on their promotions and all that. Anyways, that is it for today. Thank you so much for listening. If you like this podcast, click follow whatever podcast services you are listening this to. Share this podcast to anyone you know. It really means a lot. It really helps a lot. And until next time, so long. Farewell. Take care. Bye-bye.